Nearly 40 years ago, the number of Southeast Asians in Iowa received a boost when about 1,200 refugees fled the communist takeover of Laos and Vietnam. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And all this week we've been hearing what it's like being Southeast Asian in Iowa. Our reports from IPR's Rob Dillard have highlighted why so many Southeast Asians, many of them refugees, settled in Iowa. So this hour, we'll wind up our series by continuing to explore the culture of these people from Vietnam, Thailand, Laos, and elsewhere, and the efforts to preserve that culture here in Iowa. We get started right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And as you've been listening all this week, we've been hearing what it's like being Southeast Asian here in Iowa. Our reports from Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard have highlighted why so many Southeast Asians, many of them refugees, have settled here in Iowa. So this hour, we're winding up that series by continuing to explore the culture of these people, people from Vietnam, Thailand, Laos, and elsewhere, and the efforts these people here, our neighbors in Iowa, are making to preserve their culture from their homeland. And we'll be talking at length with some of the Iowans originally from Southeast Asia during this hour. Perhaps you are Southeast Asian and living here in Iowa. Maybe you'd like to tell us this hour how you and your family came to live in Iowa and about your community and what particular challenges, what particular joys you have found here. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can also give us a tweet. IPR Talk is the tweet for us. We're also on Facebook. Joining us to start us off, our intrepid Iowa Public Radio correspondent and Being in Iowa series reporter. Hi, Rob Dillard in our Des Moines studio.
Hello, Ben.
Tell us, why did you pick this group, Southeast Asians in Iowa?
Well, as you know, we've been, for the past 2 years, conducting a huge project called Being in Iowa. It's our way of casting a spotlight on some of the subgroups of the state's population as a way to highlight the diversity in Iowa. And I have to say, when I started thinking about Asians, it was an extraordinarily huge group of people, and I was intimidated, quite honestly, by it. I wanted to narrow it down somewhat so I could get my arms around it. So we narrowed it to Southeast Asians, and still, that was a huge group of people. They all have different cultures. They speak different languages. It gave me pause, shall I say. And but because of Iowa's long history with welcoming Southeast Asians to the state that dates back to Governor Ray's tenure in the mid-70s, I knew that their stories were important ones to tell.
Yes, and you mentioned the name that is so prominent in the series and a person we have to thank for our Southeast Asian neighbors here in Iowa, Governor Robert Ray in the 1970s. It started with the Thai Dam people. Tell us that story very quickly again.
You'll hear more details from a couple of your guests coming up in this half hour, but going back to the 1970s, many of these people from the northwest part of Vietnam had fled that country at a time of war before American involvement in Vietnam. The French were involved in Vietnam dating back to the early 1950s. And many of those Thai Dam fled to Laos at that time and lived many, many years in refugee camps there. In the mid-70s, American diplomat named Arthur Crisfield put out a call to every state governor in America, a letter asking for help with these people, help to open their arms and bring them in as refugees. The only governor to respond to that letter positively and say, yes, we will welcome these people to our state, was Governor Robert Ray.
Mm-hmm. And then on the heels of that came the boat people. That's a phrase we know from that time as well.
Again, he was watching television one evening when CBS News did a documentary on the Vietnamese boat people, and his heart again opened up to them, and he said, "You have a home in Iowa if you choose." And so many people who risked their lives, risked everything on the high seas, getting away from communist rule in Vietnam after the fall of Saigon, ended up in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Through these series, and this one is no exception. You learn so many fascinating details about Iowa that we all. Many of us are ignorant of it. I want to ask you about a sport that you discovered during this series called takraw?
It's takraw. Yeah. If you ever have a chance to go to an Asian festival in the state, almost always there's a demonstration of this extraordinary sport. It's a combination of volleyball and soccer and gymnastics. It involves getting a ball about the size of a grapefruit, a hard rubber ball, over a net without using your hands. some of the flips and distortions and the ability of these young athletes to do this is just incredible, eye-catching sport, and I'm surprised it hasn't been noticed by the Olympics because it would make a great entertaining sport.
Did you take part or just observe?
I tried to kick it a couple times and failed miserably, so okay. I am not soon to find my way to a takraw court.
Before we go, tell me what's next in the Being in Iowa series.
Well, it's kind of hard to put a label on the next group. I'm going to be looking at some of the smaller religious faiths in the state. So being Mormon, for example, being Quaker, being Sikh, and even some of the non-faiths, like being atheist, what that means to live in the state.
So exploring different faiths, minority faiths in
the
state.
Right. That's
we'll
right.
look forward to that, Rob Dillard. And I'm making an official challenge to you on the takraw court right here next time
we meet.
Okay,
one-on-one. Next time I'm in Iowa City.
All right. Rob Dillard, Iowa Public Radio correspondent and our Being in Iowa series reporter, for instance. Perhaps you missed one of the or a couple of the five reports that Rob did in this latest series. They're all online for you to listen to, either live streaming or downloading as a podcast. Go to iowapublicradio.org. And this hour, we're winding up the series with a conversation about being Southeast Asian in Iowa. If you're Southeast Asian and living in Iowa, tell us how you and your family came to live in our state, the challenges you've faced here, and the joys you've found here. 1-866-780-9100. Also in our Des Moines studio, we have two Southeast Asian Iowans who are joining us for this hour. To begin with, Hung Bacom is with us. He is a Thai Dam resident of Des Moines, came to Iowa in 1974, and welcome to our program, Hung Bacom.
Hi.
Hi. And also, I believe sitting next to you is also a Thai Dam resident of Des Moines, Ingen Suin Tuvong. Hi.
Hello.
Did I get your name halfway, even approaching the correct? Please say your names for us.
Ingen Suin Tuvong.
Ingen Suin Tuvong. Okay. Perhaps I have an hour. I might be able to get it right in that time. Tell us your stories, because you both came in the second plane of the Thai Dam to arrive in Iowa. I don't know if you would like to tell us the story of how you came to Iowa.
Well, when we had been in the camp for more than 5 months, and we was eligible to the U.S. program, to come to the U.S. We didn't know that we would come to Iowa. Then we got the interview by the INS. And when you pass, so you have to prepare the trip for that journey. Then after that, you have to go to the Utapau camp. That means the processing camp in the south of Thailand. We waiting for the vaccination and many paperwork. So in order to come to the U.S., we have to spend time over there more than 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ingen, can you pick up the stories? How did Des Moines become a center in Rob's piece? He brought out the fact that of the Thai Dam people living in the United States, the large majority of them live in Des Moines.
Yes, I can elaborate on that. Of course, at the time in 1975, I was only 12 years old, and through the leadership of our parents, grandparents, a decision was made that we are going or coming to the U.S., and the place was unknown to us at that time. And when we got to the U.S., I was still very young. I was not concerned where I was going to end up with. Mm-hmm. Governor Ray was so kind, opened the heart of the Iowan people and the homeland to us. Through histories and literatures and interviews from our elders, I found out that Iowa was the only place that accepted our people in terms of all of us together. Mm. We were a very, very small group. We wanted to stay together. We wanted to be in touch, to support each other, and Iowa was the place that opened the heart and the home to us, and that's how we ended up in Iowa, and most of us stay in Iowa.
And when you say small group, this is something over 1,000 from one particular village called Tidom. Is that correct?
Basically, yes.
Mm-hmm. When you came here as much younger people, in your case, Ingen, as a 12-year-old, your first impressions, landing in Iowa, taking in the countryside, talking with the people, what stands out about those very first days being here?
That was a long time ago, but looking back and from my memory, it was very tiring, that's for sure. The trip was very long. The weather was already cold. Most of us did not speak any English. It was a very, very scary feeling. I remember that. But being with my family, being with my cousins and our relatives, I feel comfort. I felt that, you know, things will work out. That was my very first impression. And then when we finally met with American who had offered us help, smile, languages that I didn't understand, but I know they were good and kind words. It made most of us felt good.
Mm-hmm. Hung Bakom, you were older than Ingen was. How old were you when you came to Iowa?
I was 35 years old.
Mm-hmm. Share some of your first impressions coming to our state.
Well, this is the first is we worry about the people who don't speak English. So as myself, I speak some English, but not fluently. So when we arrived to Fort Chaffee on the October 29, 1975, we were waiting for the Iowa team to pick up us over there, and we were waiting for them for maybe 2-3 weeks. In order to come to Iowa on November 17, 1975, mm-hmm. So when our people arrived to the airport, we bus into Camp Dodge to meet our sponsor, because each family must have a sponsor to lead them the life in the United States, in particular in Iowa. So our people, we thought that we would be together like in the camp. So when we came to Camp Dot, every family have been pleading with the sponsor. So that time was really emotional. Everybody crying. And
because you weren't sure if you were going to stay together, be split up, or have a sponsor?
Right. Because we didn't know that where we were going. And we been separate since the whole life of the refugee from Vietnam to Laos to Thailand. So we crying. That's the because we don't know how long we will see each other again.
You had just a tremendous background coming here, the ordeal in Southeast Asia, the wars there. Did you get an immediate sense arriving in Iowa that you had come to a place that you would be safe, that you could raise families? Or did that take a while to get the sense that it's okay, you're not going to be threatened here?
Yes, because first when we get the news, we are eligible to go to United States. And in fact, we heard on the Voice of America announcing that we'll be landing in Iowa. So we didn't know that Iowa, where is Iowa?
What is Iowa?
Yeah, what is Iowa? So we, I rushed to the city, excuse me, and buy a map of the United States and look at the Iowa and learn about Iowa. It was a farm state. Then maybe we are going to end up on farming, and because most of us, we are agricultural family.
So that would have been okay.
Yeah, that's okay. So we thought, oh, that's good. But we didn't know Iowa is cold.
Ingen, you said when you arrived, so this is October, so the cold weather was setting in.
Right,
and
yeah.
And you don't have that type of cold weather where you come from?
No, no. Our hornets over there is only 70 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we didn't know that it would be snowing again. So when we arrived,
had you seen snow before?
No.
No, never.
Yeah, we didn't know.
Uh-huh. Ingen, as a 12-year-old, I bet you found out how you could have fun in snow very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. it was a surprise.
It was a surprise. So I noticed, Hong, you are working, have worked for many years for the Bureau of Refugee Services now in the intervening decades since you arrived here. What have you seen that has improved in Iowa for refugees that came after you did?
Yes. The recent wave of the refugee, they had some difficulty because they didn't have the individual family sponsor to help them.
Mm.
So that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. And the language, I get the sense from hearing Rob's series that the language, your language, your home language is so much different than English, isn't it?
Right. So much different. And the writing and the speaking, it's so much different.
Tell me about, you're both from what is Laos, is that correct?
Yes.
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 Tell me about a Laotian tradition that you hold on to here in Iowa, that you hold dear and want to preserve for all the generations that come after you?
Well, the Laos is a landlocked country. We didn't see any sea over there. Then we had been living there for 20 years. We came from Vietnam. Then the culture over there is very, very similar to our culture. Same speaking, just a different, a little bit about some vocabulary only, but the most is same. So when we come here, we have some Laotian family with us and friend with us. So we still keeping Laotian culture too. So we had to separate our culture. Thai Dam is celebrating New Year with the Chinese and Vietnamese. Then when the Lao New Year coming, so we always celebrate with them.
Mm-hmm. I remember having Laotian food at one point, and I remember some very, very spicy food. Is that typical of your home's food?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Spicy is one of the good diet for our people because, as we sing, if you eat hot pepper, you couldn't eat more food. So we preserve food in eating the pepper.
Right. Yeah. So in coming to Iowa, you were introduced to a whole bunch of foods that you'd never before encountered, I'm sure. Ingen, what has come to be your favorite food from the Midwest?
Pizza.
Pizza. Okay. What type of pizza?
Oh, I love all kinds of pizza.
Yeah?
Pepperoni.
Yeah. Well, that would figure with the spicy, a little bit of the spicy meat on there.
Cheeseburger, hamburger, french fry. I'm okay with all of those.
And you, Hong, what do you like as far as Midwest cuisine, if I can put it that way?
Well, as when we come here, we used to eat our food. Then when we send our children to school, so they start eating American lunch and with American way. So we had to split our dinner with two cultures. We have to take our children to McDonald's, then we cook our food. Yeah. So the Midwest food is everything I love.
Right. Yeah. I just want to share with you that even though I was only 12 years old, but because Mom and Dad have always cooked our traditional home food at home, today, with my children, I carry that tradition as well. I am still cooking our traditional dish. And then every now and then we switch to American food, American, which means it could be Italian, it could be Mexican, it could be anything. So in our home, we always have rice, which is one of our main dish. And then, of course, it's not a surprise thing to have hamburger or some other dish mixed in with it. A good example would be Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. We would carry the American traditional Thanksgiving dinner by having turkey, mashed potato, corn, pie, so on and so forth. But in addition, we would have rice and possibly egg rolls and tamakhung, which is one of the dish that we carry from Laos, lap and all that stuff too. So it is not uncommon for us to have a variety of dishes, Western as well as our traditional culture.
It sounds like food is a good way also for the younger generations to preserve your culture here in the United States, something you can share, talk about. Maybe there are stories connected with some of the food. I don't know.
I'm sure it has something to do with it.
Ingen, you were a board member of the Thai Study Center, also its past president. We have a minute or so before we have to take a break. You're going to stay with us the entire hour. But what is involved there at the Thai Study Center?
Well, Thai Study Center is a nonprofit organization. It was founded in 1984. It started in a room in a basement of one of our elders. Siang Bak Thi is the director of the Thai Study Center. We have very simple purposes. One is to research and publish our Thai history and literature, to preserve and promote Thai culture, to promote and support students in higher education, promote and preserve and offer common welfare for the Thai people here in Iowa and abroad. So it doesn't have to be just here in Iowa. And then finally, to promote intercultural understanding and cooperation in the community at large.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're going to take a short break. I'd like to follow up on that when we come back.
Sure.
And we'll have some other Southeast Asians who have made Iowa their home join us as well. We're joined right now by Ingen Solintuvong and Hung Bakom. They are both residents of Des Moines, came in the mid-70s. Today we're talking about being Southeast Asian in Iowa, how Southeast Asians have come to live in Iowa in different ways. Perhaps you can tell us about your family story if you're Southeast Asian living in the state, particular challenges and joys that you found here. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Back with more Being Southeast Asian in Iowa here on River to River after a short break. This is Iowa Public Radio. It's a Friday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. So good to have you with us over the noon hour. And this noon hour, we're marking the culmination of our series, Being in Iowa, the latest in that series, Being Southeast Asian in Iowa. Rob Dillard reporting all this week. You can hear his reports online at iowapublicradio.org if you missed them on the radio. This hour, we're talking with many of the people from Vietnam, Thailand, Laos, elsewhere, talking with them, our neighbors here in Iowa who have adopted Iowa as their home, about their culture, about the challenges, the joys they've faced here in Iowa. and talking at length with them. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Still with us in our Des Moines studio, two residents of Des Moines, known as the Thai Dam people from a village in Southeast Asia, Hung Bakom and Ingen Solintavong are with us in Des Moines. And we are having two others join us for this half hour. We have Pastor So Ro Sang. He is a pastor of the Chin Baptist Church in Des Moines. Pastor Sang, welcome to our program.
Hi.
Hi. And also with you in the studio, Surasi Rodari, a resident of Des Moines as well. Surasi, welcome.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here. But really, my name pronounced Surasi Rod Ali.
Okay, I'll try to get that right. Forgive me.
Thank you.
A lot of tough names for me in this hour. I'm doing my best. Pastor Ro Sang, tell us your story of coming to Iowa, to Des Moines.
Yes, because of the... I came from Burma, actually. That is a part of Southeast Asia. And because of the religious persecution in Burma by the government of Burma, and we cannot stay longer in Burma because of our life concerns. And we have to flee to Malaysia and as a refugee. And we have been there in Malaysia, not in a camp. We need to work for our daily bread, even though we are legally a refugee, but the government of Malaysia, they don't recognize as a legal refugee, and they don't want to work in their country. But anyway, we need to work for our daily bread, and by the help of UNHCR, United Nations Commissioner for Refugee, by the help of them, we are eligible to be lent out to, we just call the third world country, because we just moved from Burma to Malaysia and from Malaysia to the other countries. Well, we were in Malaysia, we don't have a choice, or we have no other choice to live in the state that we would like to live in USA, but the resettlement agency, they just pick up us, and for myself also by the resettlement agency, and I have a chance to resettle in Des Moines, Iowa, back in 2009.
Mm-hmm. Back in 2009, so you're a very, very recent immigrant to Iowa. Tell us about because many people may not know that Christianity is a part of Southeast Asian culture as well. You brought that faith with you.
That's correct. In Southeast Asia, mostly in Burma, most of the people of Burmese, they are belong to Buddhists. And even though we are from Burma, we have there in Burma we have like 8 ethnic groups. They are the majority, and we are one of the ethnic groups in Burma. Mm-hmm. And we just came from Chin State, that is the western part of Burma, and it's just border with India and Bangladesh. And most of the Chin people, we are belonging to Christianity. And I should say 95% of the Chin people are Christian by the missionary sent from USA back in 1989.
To make sure that we're not confusing any of our listeners, Burma is the name for a country we also know today in our news as Myanmar. I want to ask you, when you came here in 2009, Pastor Sang, I understand there are thousands of Burmese living in the Des Moines area now. What have been the biggest challenges for your group?
The biggest challenges for our group is that the language, because we don't have a chance to learn English as our second language back in the camp or back in Malaysia, and that is the biggest challenges for all of the Burmese refugee. And also we just grow up in the, like I should say that we just grow up in a lawless country, and when we came here in United States or in Des Moines, Iowa, everything is changed and we are just under, so, yes.
You say Myanmar today, Burma, Myanmar is a lawless country. Why would it then be hard to transition to a country with laws? Help us understand that.
The reason I'm just telling you Burma is a lawless country is that they do have the constitution and law for the country, but even I myself also a law student back in Burma, and whatever we just learned and whatever we just do in the university, they never practice, and they used to say that whatever they just speak out by the authority, that is the law for Burma. So there's no... because of that reason, I just say that we just growing up at a lawless country.
Mm. Well, let me turn to Surasi. Now you're a resident of Des Moines, but you came from Thailand, and you are not a refugee, I understand, but came as an exchange student. Tell us about your beginnings here.
It is kind of unique. You know, when you were young as a kid that's growing up in Thailand, of course, you've seen a lot of great things about U.S. of A's. You know, you've seen movies, you read in the magazines and all that. And I'm one of them that want to explore to the U.S. country, you know, the famous movie stars and all that. Mm-hmm. So, but my uncle is already here in the U.S. establishing. He was a doctor. He retired now. So he went to visit Thailand. So I asked him, "Hey, uncle, what are the chances and opportunity that I can come to the U.S.?" You know, he said, "Well, first of all, there are two things that you need to do. First, you need to talk to your parents and see if they agree to that. Second, you need to find a school that will accept you." And I said, okay, the first thing is easy. Yeah, I talked to my parents, and of course, our home is always encouraging kids to further in education. And I said, well, I got the okay from the parents. Now, the hardest part is trying to find a school. And you know, he's a doctor. He has a lot of pull in his little town called Victor. So he made the arrangement to the school, which called HLV, which stands for Hardwick, Ladora, and Victor.
Mm, and so you came to Victor, Iowa.
Correct.
Was that somewhat of a culture shock to move from Bangkok, Thailand, to the little town of Victor, Iowa?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was imagining, you know, there's going to be big, tall buildings. And there's going to be lots of excitement song, and all that, you know. So I hop on the plane, and the plane way back, believe me, they don't use jet engines. And it took me 2 days to get here. And first I land into Chicago, which huge. I thought, oh, good. This is what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And my uncle went to pick me up in Chicago. I was so glad to see him. I said, wow, this is great. No, he said, well, don't get so excited. I said, why not? So, well, we have another 5-6 hours to drive. I said, okay. So we sat in his big station wagon from Chicago. And then, you know, town's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. By the time we got to Victor, he said, this is it. I said, what? Yeah, this is where you're going to be the rest of the year.
I don't know. How big of town is Victor, Iowa?
Yeah, Victor is about 1,000 population. Mm-hmm.
You undoubtedly came to like the town. What did you find you liked most about it?
And the thing that I found very shocking to me was one day at my uncle's house, there's a farm next to his house with a fence. And there's a big cow eating, roaming. I thought, what a minute. This is a real cow. You know, in Bangkok, you don't see that every day. you know, a real cow coming too close to you. So I ran in the house, called my mother, and said, "Mom, you wouldn't believe it. Uncle has a pet cow." He said, "What?" "Yeah, a pet cow, really a big cow." He said, "No, you're kidding me." Yeah, those are one of the things. And then, you know, the schools, you know, I was the first foreign student in that school. So there's a lot of questions, there's a lot of experience that, you know, I didn't think that I was going to make it through the year. Because really, this is not what I was looking for.
What year did you come here?
1972.
This is a question for you, Surasi, but also the others here. I wonder, what would you say are some of the common misconceptions that Iowans have had about Southeast Asians or about your country in particular when you've faced Iowans? It's a faraway land for us, and we admittedly don't often know a lot about it.
Well, I don't think it's a misconception. It's just not really knowing that much way back then. But now, you know, the global is getting very small. By a click of a mouse, you can communicate to anybody, you know, around the world. So way back, the kids really learned something in the school. I learned something from them, too, and they learned something from me. You know, the first thing was that in school, they didn't have a uniform. So I thought, wow, this is great. You can wear anything you wanted to. You know, in Thailand, mostly we have uniforms where boys will wear white shirts and either khaki pants, short, or blue pants, white socks, and black shoes.
Mm.
Out here, they can wear jeans, T-shirts, wear long hair, you know, everything that all teenagers wish it.
Right. So some schools do have uniforms and other codes, but by and large, you're right here. I wonder, let me go back to Hong Bakom. I wonder if you have any, if any of you, and let me start with Hong, any desire or how much contact you have with your home country where you grew up?
Well, we right now is a lot of our people went there and look back their native country. So, and also the technology gave us some more contact. We even can use the Skype to talk to our cousin, uncle over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that makes it easy. What about the rest of you? Other contact, Pastor Sang?
Yes, nowadays in Burma, they are also using the internet services a lot there, and we just call VZO, video chat, and by that VZO, we can just see each other on the screen, and we can just have a contact with some of our relatives back in Burma.
Mm-hmm. Ingen, I wanted to go to you because you came in the mid-1970s when you were just 12 years old. You've encountered a lot of change undoubtedly in Iowa in regards to how Iowans see refugees, see people from Southeast Asia. The Asian population in Iowa has grown quite a bit in the meantime. I wonder if you had anything to say to the question about misconceptions or the way you've been perceived over the years, perhaps a falsely perceived or people associating with things that you think are kind of strange.
Back in 1975, I think it was maybe not a misconception, but maybe misunderstanding and just not aware of there's other types of people around the world. I did not understand about the culture. I did not understand the things that kids, 12-year-old kids, do in Iowa, in Des Moines. And, of course, the peers or the friends that I met at school did not have any clue what an Asian, Southeast Asian 12-year-old does.
So what struck you as strange about what 12-year-old Iowans did in the mid-1970s?
School was different. Uniform, of course, was different. The way we eat, the way we talk, how we treat our elders, how we show common courtesy.
Elaborate that on the elders. How is that different?
In our culture back in Asia, in Southeast Asia, we have been taught from day one to always respect your elders. Whether the elders are may have been wrong, you should not ever talk back. If you walk by or pass an elder, you should always respect by lower your head. You should say proper words. Here in the U.S., a 12-year-old can certainly speak his or her mind. Not necessarily came through as a mean term or language, but still spoke his or her mind. And that's very different from where I came from.
Do you see that changing with the young Southeast Asians growing up here in Iowa? Are they I hear a chuckling that they're not exactly doing that, are they?
You're right. It has changed. We try to share some of our culture with our children, but there certainly has been some changes and a mix in all of those.
Let's use the few minutes that we have remaining to get some of your views from all of you, if you had something comes to mind about your hopes when you look to the future, the hopes that you have for your future, for your family, for the coming generations of your family here in Iowa. What do you see when you look into the future? Please, just go ahead and share.
Well, let me start, okay? Thailand is unique that we still have our own country. But the thing is, I adopted, the Iowa adopted me, and I adopted Iowa as my home now. And I have two children that were born and raised here. And I would like for them to remember and learn about Thailand as much as possible. You know, it's very important to me, you know, to keep the culture, to keep the language, to have the kids know exactly where their parents came from.
Mm-hmm. And then I imagine that's not easy at times.
No. Actually, we went through very difficult challenges when they were in high school. When they start to be a teenager, totally culture crash.
Right. Well, of course, teenagers are whatever culture they're from are into rebelling, correct?
Yeah, but this is very different. Melody, my oldest, when she was 16, she came home and said, "Well, Dad, I want to start dating." That's for just instant, you know. And in our Asian cultures, we do not, you know, until you at least graduate from college or something.
How did you handle that?
Well, see, that's it. She said, "Well, you know, you expect us to be the same as others, but now your expectation has changed." So right. I thought, well, yeah, that's a good point. So we explained to them as much as we could. But again, at that time, you know, kids, they're very strong-minded. We raised them that way.
Right. Any other views from any of the others that we heard? That, very interesting, Suresi. Any of the others, when you look into the future, what do you hope for? For yourself, your family, future generations?
Yes. As an elder in the communities, we hope that our community can be together for the next generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as you know, when the children growing up and they Americanized, their life is changing. From the family to the community, and also the job they are holding is to give them the stay far away from the family. And even right now, we lost some relation between the cousin and nephew, so on, because they live far away, and
that is
we
tough.
just met once a year or two, 3 years later. So even the cousin that are attending the college, so on, they didn't know each other like before. Before, we considered our cousin as a brother, sister, but right now, they are the same background, but when they introduced each other, they didn't know.
Okay, we have to end the conversation there. Hong Bakom, thank you very much. We wish you all a very bright future in your homeland now of Iowa. We've been talking about being Southeast Asian in Iowa this hour with Hong Bakom, Ingen Solintovong of Des Moines, also Pastor Ro Sang of Des Moines, and Surasi Rodari of Des Moines. Thank you for coming into our Des Moines studio this hour.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
River to River is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins in Des Moines. Help from John Pemble this hour. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Have a great weekend.